All right, let's shift attention to the other side of the world as far as what's happening in Ukraine. Former Army Intelligence Captain Kenneth Bombase, President and the CEO of Global Threat Solutions. All right, some of the stuff that occurred yesterday with Ukraine offered to release now some of the Russian prisoners of war in exchange for the safe evacuation of injured Ukrainian fighters trapped inside that steel mill we told you about a week and a half ago in Mariupol. Still remaining under siege, folks, by the Russian forces. That is kind of the last remaining resistance in this devastated port city, Mariupol. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And, Captain, now Ukraine... feels they got a little bit of a leverage here, trying to make a little bit of an offer, a little negotiation going on here. This by way of Ukraine now taking center stage.
Morning, Jay.
Good morning.
Yes. So a lot happened yesterday, and one thing we saw was that Ukraine cut off the gas flow to Europe, a third of Russia's gas flow, to be clear, that they cut off yesterday. And, it's interesting when you look at these. Yesterday we had discussed, Ukraine and their energy requirements. But this, I asked the question yesterday, why have they even allowed this to continue this long into this conflict? Well, Ukraine's been being paid by Russia transit fees, millions of dollars a month. So even during this conflict, while Putin's moving through Ukraine, he's paying them so that gas can still flow through there. But from what I'm reading now, Jay, they've already found alternative routes, and they've already the gas prices have come back down since yesterday. So I'm not sure what type of an impact that's going to have, or if they have leverage now because they could even cut more going forward.
The Deputy Prime Minister, I guess, is saying some of the negotiations are underway to release the injured fighters. Some different opinions, as far as what's going on there. But the fighters of the planet refused to surrender, Cap, to the Russians, saying that they fear maybe being tortured or killed. And, that could certainly happen, right?
Right, definitely. And so what it sounds like now is in the steel plant in Mariupol, there's no more civilians, at least civilians that they knew about. It's such a massive labyrinth, this place. Ukraine is saying that we know of no further civilians, but there's still a standoff between Ukrainian military and Russian forces there. And I agree with what they're saying because they've had further reports of torture and by Russian troops right now, and that's what they're concerned about. They don't want to surrender to them, and that's why we're having this standoff. Ukrainian officials discovered Russian military documents, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, that show that Russia intended to take control of all of Ukraine, despite their claim of this limited special military operation. But also, Jay, to the point we're discussing, they found 34 incidents with signs of capturing Ukrainians and torturing them. Russian troops were holding, capturing, and torturing local residents. They found metal pliers, handcuffs, batons, blood-stained clothes, and they even exhumed bodies, including, I think it was 23 victims and two children. So there's good reason for Ukrainian military not to want to surrender.
No question. Elsewhere, with the fighting, the Ukrainian general staff said Russia was having some partial success in its advance in the eastern Donetsk and Luhansk regions, also saying some of the forces had repulsed 9 attacks we got here and destroyed several drone military vehicles. Kherson region, that's the southern part of Ukraine, folks. A Russian-appointed regional leader telling one of the networks out of Russia that officials there want Putin to annex the area. That suggests to me, Captain, that Russia may try to annex Kherson the way did Ukraine's Crimea Peninsula 8 years ago, 2014, following a disputed referendum. And the question is, does that get duplicated in your estimation?
I believe it does. Jay, there's intelligence experts, former intelligence, or Russia experts that are former intelligence officers in the U.S., and they feel that Kherson is a way that Putin's going to be able to claim victory. He's achieved his goal, and he's going to do that not by continuing to fight. He's going to do that by a referendum like you mentioned in Crimea in 2014, where he's going to say, yeah, we've had a 95% approval of this referendum, so now this is going to be, we're going to annex this territory as part of Russia. And that gives him justification to say, I've reached my goals, and quite frankly, he's not doing well. This should be a good out for him at that point. And at least this phase of the conflict, he could claim victory and it would stop. So that's what everyone's watching right now. And it makes a lot of sense. He's not doing well. Ukrainian forces have actually pushed back Russian forces in the east in a lot of areas. And I think he might cut his losses.
With us. So, you know, I was thinking yesterday, what's going on with the war crime situation? Because, you know, it can't only be the focus on Vladimir Putin. And I say that because one of Ukraine's top prosecutors are readying for the first war crimes trial of a captured soldier out of Russia. And the prosecutor said her office has now charged a 21-year-old for allegedly shooting and killing an unarmed 62-year-old civilian who was riding a bike 4 days after the invasion began, which was, well, on February the 24th. So he's accused, Captain, of firing through, a car window at the man in one of these villages. When the trial actually starts, who knows? But from what we have gathered here, there are more than 10,700 allegations of war crimes by Russian forces, and they've identified over 600 suspects. So again, you know, that focus not only on Putin, but you got the forces in the field doing what they have done, killing innocent people, and this is the first we have heard of this as far as the first one is concerned.
That's right, Jay. So, you know, Ukraine says we're going to start trying war crimes for soldiers, anybody that we have evidence of. And this is totally aside from the International Criminal Court, which is also conducting a large investigation looking for evidence of war crimes, which they've found. Just recently, the World Health Organization recorded 200 attacks on healthcare facilities alone in Ukraine. These are war crimes. And the challenge is going to be holding Russia and Vladimir Putin accountable for these crimes. Like you said, give me macro, guys like Putin who's overall responsible. But these soldiers don't get a free pass. You can't say, well, Putin told me to do this. It doesn't work that way with war crimes. So if they have the evidence, they could charge these soldiers for crimes they've committed. Like I remember in the beginning of the conflict, we saw that Russian armored vehicle swerve and potentially run over that civilian vehicle. That wasn't a military target, and these all can be considered war crimes. And it reminds me, Jay, of the Bosnian Serb leader, Radovan Karadzic. And this guy this guy was found guilty of genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity. He was sentenced to 40 years in prison and later was made a life sentence. And I think he's being held in the UK. So I think that many are going to say that Putin has earned similar treatment, but it's going to be interesting to see how that goes forward. Now we have Vladimir Putin, who's been threatening nuclear retaliation this entire conflict. How are we going to move forward with holding everybody from soldiers to Vladimir Putin accountable for these war crimes?
No question. You got a trickle-down effect happening right now with the Russian forces. Now, yesterday, the question came up, and you did a great job as far as the search and everything else from that. And I want you to tell the folks about it today regarding about where Ukraine gets its resources and everything else. And that has not been put out there. That's important stuff. But maybe you can kind of answer and kind of clear it up for the audience, my friend.
I can, yeah. So it was a great question, and no one's really put a lot of attention into this. We talk about Russia, and we talk about Western Europe, and no one's talking about Ukraine themselves. So one thing that's interesting, Jay, is that back in 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea, Ukraine at that time, their energy ministry, they say they lost 80% of their oil and natural gas deposits in the Black Sea because of that. That was devastating to them. So historically, Ukraine received the majority of its natural gas imports from Russia, like much of the rest of Europe. So, however, following that annexation of Crimea, they cut off direct Russian natural gas imports, and they replaced them with natural gas from European countries. But what's ironic about that is much of the natural gas that they got, or some of it at least, was from Germany, who was getting it from Russia. And it was kind of just a symbolic gesture. Even though they were getting it from Germany, that was actually coming from Russia originally. So they have made changes, though, to receive fuel from other countries like Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan. They're receiving fuel increasing levels from those countries because of what's going on with Russia. But I think what's really interesting, you see, even in times of war, that countries will maintain relations to be able to bring fuel into their countries because it's so critical to them, even countries they're at war with at that time. But I think now they do have a newfound leverage because in Russia's push to make Europe dependent on their oil and natural gas, included Ukraine in much of that plan because they've run pipelines through there. So now I think Ukraine has a little bit of leverage, and they're going to try and use that, as we saw yesterday.
So we'll keep an eye on that. As well as other things with the fine captain here, Ken Bombace, the president and CEO of Global Threat Solutions. We'll see what today brings. Sir, pleasure, and we'll keep the watch going, and we'll talk soon.
Excellent, Jay. I look forward to it.